From atop the Rocky Mountains, the crossroads of the West, you are listening to the Liberty Roundtable Radio Talk Show.
All right. Happy to have you along, my fellow Americans. Sam Bushman live on your radio. Hard-hitting news the networks refuse to use, no doubt, starts now. This, my fellow Americans, is the broadcast for May 1st in the year of our Lord, 2021. This is our one of two, and our goal is to promote God, family, and country, and to protect life, liberty, and property, and to do so in the traditions of our founding fathers. Yes, indeed, ladies and gentlemen, we use the blueprint for liberty, the supreme law of the land, the Constitution for the United States of America. That is, indeed, our guide. Ladies and gentlemen, we reject revolution. We stand for peaceful restoration of the greatest country on the face of the earth. And as you know, we believe the checks and balances brilliantly put in place by the founding fathers, one of the great peaceful restorative solutions we have at our fingertips. I'm going to say it again. We reject revolution. We stand for peaceful restoration of the greatest country on the face of the earth. But you know what, ladies and gentlemen, we have a wonderful, great country. I get it. But the mistakes in America are many. And my goal is not to dwell on those mistakes, but to highlight them in a way that we never repeat them, the way we treated black people in America. There are some shameful realities to that, folks. Don't deny it. The problem is, how do you fix it? Do you just create reparations and wallow in the mire about it forever? I think not. I think the answer is to admit to the mistakes, to go forward in faith and hope, and to never repeat those mistakes. We've wronged the blacks. We've wronged Native Americans, no doubt about it, folks. Let's be clear. We have wronged the members of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, nicknamed the Mormons. In many ways, sadly, our society has wronged women. And I don't want to dwell on those things, like I say, but I do want to acknowledge that, you know what? There has been things in our history, not just the history of America, but the history of humans on the planet. But there's another group of people that we've ignored to a great degree as well. It's a group of people that we've really created by our societal realities, norms. We bury the problem. We don't talk about it. We don't know what to do about it. But then it just grows and gets worse. I think at the core of it, to a great degree, is fiat fake money, creating belligerent, inflationary, hidden taxes. I think at the core of it is our unwillingness to acknowledge it, to deal with it openly and frankly. I think a lot of it has to do with bureaucrats and politicians and armchair quarterback situations who pretend they know the answers when they don't, and they create really policy, laws, guidance that does nothing but compound the problem. I think the problem is people don't know how to handle it. Anything different from themselves, people seem to not know how to handle. I, as a completely blind individual, seem to know that. Everywhere I go, people look at me, people stare at me. People think I'm strange. Sadly, to some degree, they're probably right. But at the same time, do I deserve that treatment? Do segments of our population deserve that kind of a treatment? I think not. And I think we need to change. I think we need to grow and get better. And what I don't think we need to do is go from one bad situation to the next. Oh, well, we're going to, you know, fix everything with the blacks. We're going to fix everything with the Native Americans, the Indians, if you will. We're going to fix everything with the religious people, the Mormons. We're going to fix everything with the white supremacists. We're going to solve everything with the whatever group of people we're talking about. But what we do is we just then move the target to the next group. And the group I speak of today is the homeless in America. I don't know if you know this, ladies and gentlemen, but listen carefully to what I'm saying. There's an article in WorldNet Daily, in my opinion, one of the most trusted news sources in America today. But it says this: San Francisco's perilous trifecta. Residents are homeless, psychotic, and addicted. They say, where do social workers even start? WND.com. Now, that doesn't mean all homeless people are hopelessly addicted. It doesn't mean all of them are mentally ill. They are homeless, many of them. Some of them are mentally ill. Some of them are addicted. Some of them have the trifecta. Others have unique circumstances. Sometimes being homeless is beyond your control. See, we seem to think in America somehow that, you know what, if you're homeless, why the heck won't you work? What's wrong with you? What? How did you get there? You must be doing something wrong. Everybody else is prospering. What? And we seem to have these, in my opinion, dishonest conversations with ourselves, oftentimes, that make us feel better, right? That make us feel like, well, I'm not there because I work hard. I'm not there because, and you tell yourself all these stories. But whether it be a veteran that served their country who is now homeless for reasons maybe beyond their control, to the person who has had a lot of bad luck scenarios, problems with health, maybe some mental issues, but yet maybe a stroke of bad luck. The sad part about our society, and the reason that I tell you this whole story as I do, is because oftentimes once you get in a place, it is very, very difficult to get out of that place. And if you're not given proper chances or proper opportunities, then sometimes it's almost impossible to get out of that place. Let me give you an example. Let's say you become homeless. And now you're trying to go get a job. Where do you put your possessions while you're at work? When you go in for an interview, how do you take a shower so that you can be ready to present yourself decently for that interview? I mean, you know, you take a shower somewhere, or at least try to. You might just get arrested. How do you get a good enough sleep to be alert and be awake and when you don't have a place to sleep? How do you get, and I go on and on. And then, hey, if I'm on the streets for a while or whatever circumstantially, how do I make sure that I can get, you know, my teeth fixed or other health issues solved? And the problem is issues compound, and they compound rapidly. And I don't mean to make excuses for anyone, but I do mean to tell a real story. I do mean to openly, honestly, do my very best to deal with subjects that are very tough. Tough indeed. My guest today, ladies and gentlemen, is a man by the name of Dean Spencer. Meet Dean. He's a homeless American. The headline that I have is America Hears Dean's Story. How did he get there? Believe it or not, in America, ladies and gentlemen, the homeless estimate in the United States is just over 500,000 people. It's over 550,000 people and sadly growing daily. 550,000 people homeless in what we call a Christian nation. You say, well, as Christians, aren't we supposed to be our brother's keeper? Aren't we supposed to clothe the naked? Aren't we supposed to feed the hungry? Aren't we supposed to care for those who... Aren't we supposed to bear one another's burdens? Well, Utah's probably one of the most conservative states in the union as well, one of the most Christian states, at least. Well, in Utah, according to statistics in January 2019, Utah had an estimated... 2,798 homeless, experiencing homeless on any given day is how they put it. As reported by Continuums of Care, and that's according to the Utah or U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development, right? What is the solution to San Francisco's homeless problem? What is the solution to rural America or Utah's homeless problem? Bureaucrats wring their hands with no solutions. Americans stand idly by, oftentimes because government won't let individuals compete. Are we our brother's keeper? Can we minister to those who are maybe less fortunate? Can we look at them with a hand-up attitude? Can we look at them as equals? Can we jettison the judgment? Are we big enough to humbly provide aid and love and support as the Good Samaritan did? And the last question I have in my series of questions is, will we? Will we do these things? Will we make a difference? And then the final companion question, can we make a difference? Is it something that we can do? Can we? Will we? How can we solve this homeless problem in America? Some of us live in castles. Some of us live on the streets. Most of us live somewhere in between. Varying degrees of wealth and et cetera, et cetera. Varying degrees of comforts. While one buys a big screen TV, the next American worries about their next meal. In righteous, moral, honorable societies, would we be able to say there are no poor among us? Wasn't America all about building the middle class? Isn't that what the founders fought for? Hey, we don't need rich or poor. We don't have kings and vagabonds. We have Americans. And yeah, the harder you work, the more you might prosper, but everybody has the opportunity to do well. And you know what? There's a starting place, a foothold for anybody who's willing to try. And once you get your foothold, there's a ladder for success. Defining success is up to each individual. I get it. But isn't what America was built on, built for? Wasn't that the hope and the dream of the founders to say, hey, you know what? We're all God's children. Do we still believe in that fundamental, basic hope? What do they call that? Let me see if I got this right. Isn't it called the American dream? Because America is based on Christian principles. I ask you, my fellow Americans, are you a Christian? When we come back, we'll hear Dean's story from beginning to end to the best of our ability. We will ask hard questions. Hopefully, we'll gain understanding. This is the one and only Liberty Roundtable Live.
Can a nation conceived in liberty carry its head high if it denies protection to the youngest and most vulnerable of its citizens? Can a country founded on God-given rights continue to thrive without understanding that life is a precious gift from our Creator? As a physician, I have looked into the eyes of one-pound babies. I have cradled their small bodies in the palm of one hand. I defy those who are careless, who would disregard life and look at these tiny little miracles and say, we're not going to protect that.
But I believe there will come a time when we are all judged on whether or not we took a stand in defense of all life from the moment of conception until our last natural breath. One thing I promise you, I will always take a stand for life.
As a parent, is receiving a faith-based, character-focused education for your children difficult to find? Do you believe that godly principles should be a central component in your child's education? Imagine a school where faith and integrity are at its center, where heritage and responsibility instill character. For over 40 years, American Heritage School has been educating both hearts and minds, bringing out academic excellence. This is the school where character and embracing the providence of a living God are fundamental, where students' national test scores average near the 90th percentile. With American Heritage School's Advanced Distance Education Program, distance is no longer an issue. With an accredited LDS-oriented curriculum from kindergarten through 12th grade, your children can attend from anywhere in the world. American Heritage School will prepare your child for more than a job. It will prepare them for life. To learn more, visit American-Heritage.org. That's American-Heritage.org.
Ladies and gentlemen, this song called The Power of Love. Yeah, the power of love makes the world go round, doesn't it, ladies and gentlemen? Do we have enough love in our hearts? Dean Spencer, welcome to Liberty Roundtable Live, sir.
Yeah, Sam, we'll start out this saga. The address is Route 1, Box 7, American Fork, Utah. It was... The address is right next to the north border of Utah Lake, right below 5th East, if you get off the freeway. I was born with wonderful parents on a farm. I guess when I was 5 years old, I don't remember much about it. My mother had some mental health issues, and she had to be removed from the home. And so my dad raised me. And a dear uncle that was never married, older than my dad, the oldest brother. My dad had polio when he was 3 years old, so he only had one good leg, and he had a brace that was made for him. But he got around well. I had one sister, and me is the only son, and a massive amount of acreage to farm, and so I knew nothing but hard work. And so from the age of five, you know, I was virtually with my father all the time and out in the farm, and a nice little white house with a lot of responsibilities. But anyway, so fast forward to this paradise, you know, with nice clean water and anything a kid would want, I would think. And then I had a little trouble in school, you know, learning stuff and dyslexia.
All right, keep the background noises quiet, though. There's some tapping. Try and eliminate that. Keep going.
I was dyslexic and had a hard time studying and virtually didn't want to be there. But anyway, I struggled through that and actually had a wonderful childhood. And then I ended up getting married to this beautiful woman.
Before we get there, did you graduate from high school?
No, I finished high school, but I didn't get the correct credits I needed, you know. So I wasn't a high school graduate, to say, but I didn't really drop out. I took trade tech classes and just some shop classes and virtually. But I was good in math. But my, my vocal deal and my speech and stuff like that was really failing. And I didn't have the ability to read. So anyway, I had two strong hands and knew how to work and was into automotive stuff, and we had to fix our own machinery and stuff like that. So my skills in a mechanic and two strong arms and two good legs, I was able to function very well.
All right, so let me understand. Just so we get it all. Can you read now?
Right. What's that?
Can you read now?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I learned how to read by getting a job at Geneva Steel, and with nothing to do at times. So I'd struggle through a book. The first book I read was Stephen King, The Stand. After that, you know, I was able to be able to concentrate and read. So, yeah, that's one of my favorite things to do now is read.
Okay, so you overcame your dyslexia is the point. You overcame the struggles of not being able to read and as a child struggling with it, but you disciplined yourself, you worked hard, and you learned to read, and you kind of conquered that, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
All right, keep going, sir. So you got a great job at Geneva Steel. You found a woman, huh?
Oh, yeah. Married very early. Some things went on the farm. My dad had to sell it because my uncle passed away, and it was just too much. He'd figured, and, you know, he'd always struggled on that farm because they'd been down there since the 1800s. Some of the first people down here in the valley in American Fork. And so he was tired of the farming because it was just all work. All work and no play. And, you know, he figured maybe just sell it and move on. And they were friends with one of the main guys down there in Geneva. So it was like I could basically sign on, and I had a job there. So the jobs have never been a problem for me because I know how to do a lot of stuff, from a bricklayer to equipment operator, because I've running all the equipment and stuff on the farm. very familiar with you know, the internal combustion engines, and was into street racing and all kinds of stuff like that. So I've always been able to do virtually anything that I want, and I still can, you know, work every day. But I'm getting old now. I'm born in 57, so I'm
all right. So let's get to it, though. So you found a girl. Tell us a little bit about her.
What's that?
You found a girl. Tell us a little bit about her.
Oh yeah, yeah. She was just a beautiful little girl, and we ended up. We got married when we were very young, everything against us, and struggled through that. And then the Geneva Steel shut down, but I'd already had a business going on the side, a mechanic shop. So I already had a shop. So anyway, so I went from that. Plus, I was doing some masonry, you know, every once in a while for friends of mine that had companies. So I was a workaholic, and that's what my kids remember me by, is always gone. And it was virtually, you know, I was home very little. And so we had a daughter, beautiful little daughter, first child, and then we had a son, my first son, and then two more after that, but right around, I think it was 81 or so, the Geneva plant shut down, and times were hard around here then. But I was flourishing, so I didn't collect any of the unemployment or any of that stuff. I just kind of done my own thing and found some odd jobs going on, and always helping out friends because their vehicles would be broken down and stuff, and would you know, put new motors or whatever in them, get them on the highway again, and so this life was wonderful. And then I wasn't really much into the church and that, but I built my own home over in Orem.
So hold on. So growing up, you weren't very religious. Was your dad religious? And did you have religion in your life as a kid?
No, not really. I was baptized, maybe went to church like two or three times. And
okay, so your whole life, and was your wife religious?
She was. She was raised pretty in the LDS religion.
All right, so she was religious. You weren't. Did that cause a problem in your marriage?
Not at all. I guess she wasn't in the hat. I don't. We just didn't go to church, and I remember a bishop came over.
All right, so everybody in the worldwide and the international audience, a bishop is like a pastor.
Yeah, the LDS bishop.
Keep going,
yeah.
Sir. Yep. People don't know what that is, so I got to catch them up.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah. So he comes over to the house one day and asks, you know, why I don't go to church, you know, and he wants to welcome me to church. And I says, well, there were some things that went on, you know, when I was younger that. I was basically, I guess I was disfellowshipped. Well, I know I was. And I said, well, I just haven't gone to church. And so,
all right, hang tight. Dean Spencer with me, ladies and gentlemen. What's it like to become homeless? Dean Spencer, ladies and gentlemen, meet Dean. He's a homeless American. America, here's Dean's story. Could it happen to you? Liberty Roundtable Live.
Your daily Liberty Newswire. You're listening to Liberty News Radio. USA Radio News.
I'm Brandon Gunn. California is increasing early release credits for 76,000 inmates, including violent and repeat felons, as it further trims the population of what once was the nation's largest state correctional system. More than 63,000 inmates convicted of violent crimes will be eligible for good behavior credits that shorten their sentences by one-third. The changes were approved this week by the State Office of Administrative Law with almost no public notice. Critics say this move will put more Californians at risk. The Florida legislature passed a bill this week that would forbid social media companies like Facebook or Twitter to ban elected officials from communicating on their platforms. Governor Ron DeSantis has pledged to sign the bill. The move comes 3 months after social media giants YouTube and Twitter removed former President Donald Trump from their platforms, a decision which many commentators warn could indicate that big tech has too much power over political speech. This is USA Radio News.
Maybe you've heard about MediShare and you know what it is. It's the affordable alternative to health insurance, but you've wondered, can I really save a significant amount of money on my monthly healthcare bills? And the answer is an emphatic yes, you can. You could save a lot of money. Whether it's just for you or for an entire family, MediShare has an option for you. In fact, the typical family saves $500 a month switching to MediShare. And it really is the gold standard when it comes to healthcare sharing. You get free telehealth services, you get a huge network of doctors, you get great customer support, and you get the sense of security that comes from being a part of 400,000 people who share not just each other's medical bills, but purpose too. MediShare is a community of Christians who pull together and pray for each other, which is very refreshing right now. If you want more info, it's so simple. You can get a price within 2 minutes. Call 833-34-BIBLE. That's 833-34-BIBLE. 833-34-BIBLE.
President Biden talks schools opening in the fall. Tim Berg has more.
President Biden believes schools should be open for 5-day-a-week in-person learning in the fall, despite the fact that children likely will not be vaccinated by then. Biden telling NBC's Today Show,
based on the science of the CDC, they should probably all be open. There's not overwhelming evidence that there's much of a transmission among these people, young people.
Teachers' unions, mainly those in major coastal cities, have resisted reopening schools for much of the 2020-2021 school year, refusing to return teachers to classrooms until a variety of demands, some of which are not directly related to COVID, have been met. From the USA Radio News Phoenix Bureau, I'm Tim Berg.
Two storm systems from the Gulf will result in wet, stormy weather for parts of the South and plains into next week. Possibility of flash floods in parts of Texas and Louisiana. Find us on the web at usaradio.com. This is USA Radio News.
All right, back with you live, ladies and gentlemen. Dean Spencer with me. Meet Dean. He's a homeless American. America, here's Dean's story. How did he get there? Could this be you? Serious question, ladies and gentlemen. Oh, no, it couldn't be me. I work hard. Oh, no, it couldn't be. You know what, ladies and gentlemen? You never know. Circumstances happen. Life happens. And be grateful every day if it's not you. But also understand that there are good, honest Americans who this happens to. And many times to no fault of their own. Sometimes it's partly their fault, partly not their fault. There's a lot of reasons. Everybody's case is unique and different. Everyone is unique and different. Ladies and gentlemen, Dean Spencer's telling us about his early life. He was not religious. So a pastor comes over when he's married. He's got 4 children. Comes over and says, hey, why aren't you going to church? Dean says, okay, I had some problems when I was a kid. Church didn't go very well for me. Dean, pick it up there, sir.
Oh, yeah. When you say that hard work, you know, that's one of the reasons probably we never went to church on the farm is every day was the same day. The cows had to be fed some days, you know, just like the baby has to be fed. So these chores were every day. So when I got married and had my own business and stuff going on, Sundays was actually the weekends was the days I worked hardest because I wasn't being bothered. And so this was one of the problems I was going to have, you know, I end up finding out is to have this day of rest that just wasn't in my clock and still isn't in a way. But I like, as I heard the story, and then we had to have a bishop's court, to see what my status was and all that stuff, and I found these people, very forgiving, because by far I wasn't a perfect and still not a perfect person, and I know how to drink a beer once in a while, and this was, wasn't a problem back then, because when I had that family, I remember one day I had my own business getting going, a body shop, and it's either my booze or the booze or my family. So I'd quit, altogether. And so that wasn't the, this word of wisdom stuff wasn't a problem. So anyway, I loved the concept, and we went through what they call the temple classes. I had very good neighbors.
Let's make sure we keep it where people understand you're using too many words from the Mormon Church or the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Basically, what you said is you found religion and you decided to try to come back, right?
Yeah, I found religion.
You decided to embrace religion in your life.
Thought it was a good, good concept, to have a God in your life. So not to use too much LDS stuff, but we were married and sealed in the temple, and things were supposed to be like a blessing now, And this is what I wanted to get here is all of a sudden, here's where my life starts falling apart. And so when I get religion in my life, I'm trying to not work on Sundays, and I'm trying to be, just a little bit different, let's say, than what I normally did in my business career. And so slowly, things just started not panning out financially. And we didn't have very many bills. I just had a house payment. By now, I've got a big collection of muscle cars, and everything I have is paid for. I've got tools. I've got everything a guy needs, all paid for cash as I go along. Plenty of customers, all the work I could do, good friends. Everybody that came to me was only by the word of mouth. I never advertised. I didn't even have a phone most of the time. And so I've got this business where, just looking back on it, it's just like trust, a word of mouth, and good friends, and everybody's happy with my work. And but now the financial empire's falling apart. So my wife is doesn't have the money she thinks she needs to have, so she wants to go to work and get a job. Well, if she goes to work, I have four kids now, and I've got to take off my time to watch my kids, which I'm glad she did in a way, because I got to spend some time with my kids. So fast forward a little bit, just things were just, I could feel it coming down. I remember coming home from a swing shift job from a computer chip place where she was working, and she says, "I think there's more to life than this." And I knew it at that time, my life was going to spiral downhill, because I felt we had everything. We had four beautiful kids, a home, and just everything a guy could want. And so it started that she had to have a new car. She was tired of driving my old cars around, which was worth a fortune. And she had to have a new car, and it went from the new car to just not being happy. And I, I got behind on the bills. The new car was breaking down, and it needs tires, and it needs this. And so slowly, and it wasn't really slowly, things were falling apart. I was sick of dealing with customers. So I was in the restoration business. So I thought, well, if I could just buy and sell my own cars, I can get rid of all these customers. So one day it was just like a crash. It was really just a crash. I was working on this wealthy customer's car. It was a Lincoln Continental that I'd restored for him. And he was going out of town for a few days and wanted me to just buff out this one little spot. But it took me 15 minutes. And I left his house and going up 800 north in Provo, coming from where the canyon was, this guy pulled right out in front of me while I'm doing 50 miles an hour in that car. And boom, I booted him like a football. And I looked him right in the eyes, and he just pulled right out in front of me. Well, I get back to see if he's okay. And you could tell the guy was drunk. This is only 11 o'clock in the morning. And he'd got Listerine bottles. And it was a crowded weekend. People everywhere. And I'm picking up bumpers and stuff off the road. And next thing you know, I thought they were... Anyway, he's gone. He left the scene of the accident. Nobody's got any insurance. This guy had so much money, he carried his own liability. And it was just like, it just knocked the wind out of me. I got a $15,000 loan to buy a bunch of cars. This is where, August 20th, 1990, when they went into Kuwait. I had a bunch of cars down in Los Angeles, trying to sell them. Nothing was selling at the swap meet. So here I've got a big loan due, $15,000 loan due. I'm getting behind on payments. I quit taking any customers' cars. And so I sat there and looked, and this guy that owned the car, his grandson was there and seen it. And so he calls him, and he's mad at me. He thinks, and he just says, fix the car. I'll be back in a couple weeks, I sat there and looked at that car for 2 months. I just could not gather myself to even touch that car. So, anyway,
ladies and gentlemen, we're talking to Dean Spencer. He's a homeless American. He was prospering and doing well. The wheels fell off. How? Could this be you? What if nobody believed in you? Ladies and gentlemen, how would you feel? Hang tight. Liberty Roundtable Live. I am Sam Bushman.
Scott Bradley here. Most Americans are painfully aware that the nation is on the wrong track and in dire straits. Unfortunately, most political pundits only nibble around the edges when they claim to address the issues. Even worse, many of the so-called solutions are simply rewarmed servings of what got us into the mess we currently face. And the politicians think we're so gullible and naive that we'll buy their lies that they have reformed and now understand where they led us astray. Unfortunately, the truth of the matter is that they simply wish to continue to hold power. The solution to America's challenges is found in returning to the timeless principles found in the United States Constitution. My book and lecture series will reawaken in Americans an understanding and love of the principles which made this nation the freest, most prosperous, happiest, and most respected nation on earth. Visit topreservethenation.com. And order my book and lectures to begin the restoration of this great nation.
Okay, girls, about finished with your lesson on money?
Daddy, what is a buy-sell spread for gold coins?
Well, when you sell a gold coin to a coin shop that's worth, say, $1,200, you don't actually get $1,200. But don't worry, we're members of UPMA now, so we don't have to worry about that.
Daddy, what if somebody steals our gold?
We don't have any gold at the house. It's stored safely in the UPMA vault, securely and insured.
But the S&P 500 outperformed gold. Daddy, gold is a bad investment.
Some people do think of it that way, but actually, gold is money. And as members of the United Precious Metals Association, we can use our gold at any store, just like a credit card. Or I can ask them to drop it right into Mommy and Daddy's bank account, because we're a UPMA member family. Find out more at upma.org. That's upma.org.
You come from the land down under, ladies and gentlemen. If you're homeless, does it feel like you live in a world from down under? Sad tale to tell, but true. Homeless stories run the gamut. Sad to say, in Las Vegas, there's stories of underground homeless cities below the casinos. So to highlight the irony, you've got casino people gambling and smoking and drinking themselves into a stupor with plenty of money, many of them going broke. And then you have the homeless camps under the city, oftentimes underground in the sewer systems and everything else. If you don't believe me, go study it on the internet. Type in Vegas, living under the city, into Google, and you'll find YouTube after YouTube of exposés done on the topic. That's an extreme example. Dean Spencer with us today. His example, not that extreme, but just as heartbreaking and just as difficult. But ladies and gentlemen, what happens to the homeless is pretty soon nobody believes in them. No one will give them a chance. People look at them with ridicule and derision, and the list goes on and on. Joe Nichols, believe it or not, country singer, tells a very sad story. I want to play this song because it relates to Dean's situation to a great degree and to many situations of homeless people. Even if you're not homeless, does this relate to you? Could this be you? Here's Joe Nichols. Listen to the words to the song.
I watched him take the two-strike call. He hadn't tried to swing at all. I guess he had all he could take. He walked away for goodness sake. His father's voice was loud and mean. You won't amount to anything. That little boy quit trying. He just walked away. There were teardrops on his face. Tell me, how would you feel? You'd probably give up too, if nobody believed in you. That old man said, one more try. I know I'm not too old to drive. I promise, son, I'll do my best. This time I'm gonna pass the test. Give me the keys, Dad, and get in. His father never drove again. That old man quit trying. He just turned away. And there were teardrops on his face. Tell me, how would you feel? You'd probably give up too, if nobody believed in you. We take his name out of the schools. The lawyers say it breaks the rules. Pledge of Allegiance can't be read, and under God should not be said. I wonder how much he will take. I just pray it's not too late. What if God quit trying and he just turned away? There were teardrops on his face. Tell me, how would you feel? You'd probably give up too. Nobody believed in you. Tell me, how would you feel? You'd probably give up too if nobody believed in you.
Ladies and gentlemen, homelessness is a serious thing. And it's not just for those who are experiencing it firsthand, such as Dean Spencer on your radio with me now. But it's all of us that experience it in some ways, whether through ignorance, whether through eyes from afar, whether through, and what will we do? How will we handle it? Where will we? There's hope, folks. So, Dean, the wheels fell off. Life fell apart. Your wife decided, not only did she sick of this life, life's got to have more. Not only did she want a new car, she wanted a new life without you in it, right?
Yeah, pretty much. But it went on for a little while after that. You know, I tried, you know, I kind of snapped out of it, but financially, things were really falling apart because I had that $15,000 note due, and I couldn't come up with the money. And so now I'm running, basically, and I'm wanting to sell everything I have and just move on. And so I'd found this other house, like almost magically, found this other house. I still had fairly good credit. I had really good credit so far. But anyway, I found this house, another house to get, and we ended up trying to do a deal on this house and move on and put our other house up for sale. And that house got tied up in court. Somebody filed a clouded the title on it. And I got a crash course in real estate and ended up losing that house. Her mom had passed away. And they had a house available that they were living in because her father got married to somebody, another wife. So we had this house that we could move in. So now I wasn't the breadwinner anymore. And so it just slowly started falling apart. And I'd lost my shop. I had another shop that I was buying. Everything. Now, this is where I really started believing in God. And I'd never read the book of Job until years later. And I thought it was just one thing after another. It was just like the buffets of Satan came down on me and everything was being destroyed. And so to fast forward to where all of a sudden I get some criminal charges pressed. 3 years later, on fraud charges, supposedly fraud charges on that loan, got tied up in the court system, had no idea.
Now they say fraud charges those. Because they kind of make it seem like you were just trying to get out of the loan or not pay for it or what?
Yeah.
All right.
Supposedly that I did a false credit application. And in a way, you know, I owed them the money and I was hiding the cars because they had $70,000-$80,000 worth of collateral at the time for $15,000. So I was just shuffling them things around. I you know, I tried to take out a Chapter 11 bankruptcy to reorganize. They wouldn't accept that. So it was one of these push come to shove deals, which, you know, in my mind, I was a little bit guilty because I didn't get them the money back. And trying to save.
So the bottom line, though, is they called it criminal because of the way the law's written. But the truth is that, yeah, you were changing things around and you were a little bit guilty. But in reality, what you're really trying to do is just save your bacon. And as you went to courts and everything else, they shut those avenues down. And because you didn't really get a chance to make amends, then it just went all south. Is that a good summary?
Perfect summary. And I was happy with the verdict. You know, they had me charged with second degree felony. And at the end of it, it basically a false credit application, which it wasn't. And so I pled a no contest deal. They talked me into it, you know, my public defender, which he couldn't see where the crime was at all. But he thought that was a pretty good deal. I'd just do maybe 30 days on work release. They had a work release program, and it'd go away like a parking ticket. But what I found myself getting on probation, and the probation officer was just on my back. You've got to have a business license. You can't do anything without a business license. You can't even raise the... and by now, every sort of license that I had was expired and gone. I didn't even have a place to work, but I could always find a place to work, a shop to rent or something. I had cars and vehicles scattered throughout the entire county, you know, in storage units, and was just all, you know, it's all junk. When it comes down to it, it's just, you could just see that all this stuff is just material junk. And what's important in life is just a family, but you don't realize that. You cling to your riches in a way.
Hang tight, ladies and gentlemen. I want to make a pause marker here. I want you to say that again, Dean, because you know what? We first started talking about fancy cars and nice things, and it's all true in a way. But at the same time, it's all junk. And when compared to the things that matter in life, they're nothing. But you don't realize that at the time. Isn't that what you said, Dean?
Oh, yeah. You don't realize until it's all gone. And then it's a relief. It's just the biggest relief when it's all gone. But I still find myself trying to get somewhere. And where do you start? You know, you've got to get something. You got to have a place to keep something, you know, and then you realize, oh man, I'm in the same boat as I was years ago with just frivolous stuff, trying to get back into life. But yeah, it's, and then, you know, then what I found out later on is, you not only got this stuff, now you've got some sort of a criminal record. And so it goes on where you have to have everything to order to be on probation. You're supposed to have
all right, hang tight, ladies and gentlemen. Dean Spencer with us, 1 hour in the can, second hour coming up. This is a 2 hour Liberty Roundtable Live special. Our guest, Dean Spencer. Meet Dean. He's a homeless American. America, here's Dean's story. Could this be you? Liberty Roundtable Live. I am Sam Bushman. Let's dig in. Let's discover. Let's have a little bit of empathy and compassion. This is America, a nation that turns to God. At least we used to. We pray that continues. God save the Republic of the United States.